Thank you, Rob. This is John Williams, and happy Saturday to you. I'm here until 3 o'clock. We are Saturdays from 1 to 3 here on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio. You can also check me out on Facebook. I'm King John there. That's where we drop our podcasts, including one about Thomas Jefferson and one we call The Mincing Rascals. We'll sample each of those in the next 2 hours. But what we really want to sample on the show today, and I guess the Jefferson clip will be appropriate, is what's going on in Iowa and the fact that WGN Radio has our own Ro Khan and Steve Cochran there on Monday. Ro joins us now, but from where? Where are you, Ro?
I'm here in Chicago, yet to have left. I'm not wheels up yet, John.
Okay. Yeah. Say something in Iowan. Do you understand the whole Iowa caucus process, Ro? I'm not sure we have to understand it, but do you?
I do. I appreciate what they do there, because even though it seems goofy, I think, to most people, as opposed to being, you know, a standard, like, you know, you would go to Illinois and you step into a booth and you punch a card or you press a button or you touch a touch screen. They have, on the Democratic side at least, they have these caucus sites where people go, whether it's a church basement or somebody's living room even or a school. And they go into a big room, and then the caucus goers, you know, they say, all right, well, who's going to be with Hillary Clinton? Who's going to be with Bernie Sanders? Who's going to be with the good-looking guy? Nobody knows his name. And then everybody goes literally to a corner of a room. And then if no one has a plurality, then what they do, or it's, I think it's, you have to be 50% of the room or greater. Then what they do is they try to talk people with in the minority camps over to their camp.
Right.
And it's a pretty fascinating thing. Now, on the Republican side, it's a little bit more standard. You do the same thing. You go to a caucus site, and then you write down who your candidate is by secret ballot, and you put it in, and they count those up.
It's kind of weird that they, you know, they're going to strong-arm each other. I mean, if you're an O'Malley guy, you know you're not going to win. So you're just going to go there and see who gives the best little speech in somebody's living room or gymnasium, right?
Right, right. And I think the idea there, too, is to, you know, have the people make the appeal. And the other, I think, really kind of cool thing, because obviously Iowa's a, you know, pretty small by population state, the caucus goers, the you know, the professional choosers, if you will, who do this, you know, they all go out and they meet these candidates and they see them. They either go to a rally or they end up in a living room with them. And it's very, 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 very retail in terms of the politics. I mean, these guys have to get right in with them and touch them and talk to them and answer their questions. And it's a human vetting process, John. And I think that's kind of the coolest part of it. You know, and it's the only state that can really do this because of the, yeah, you know, the way that the state is laid out. And it's a great test for these people to see if they have the endurance and the, you know, the sort of, you know, personal fortitude to pull it off.
Yeah, that's maybe the most troubling thing to me. I mean, I want to be king someday, Ro, but because, you know, one thing, you don't have to do Iowa. You don't have to go to New Hampshire. You're just king. I mean, how these people have the endurance, you know, to physically or mentally. Like, think about Bernie Sanders. He would be a 74-year-old president, right? No, he's older than that. My point is, can you imagine having the physical stamina to go through what these people go through?
No. It's pretty crazy. You know, interestingly, though, the one guy who's kind of getting the best of this, obviously, is Trump, because he's got his own plane. He is said to sleep at home every night of this. He does one campaign event a day. It's so
I didn't know
broadly,
that. Wow.
Broadly covered. Yeah. And he, you know, he flies back to LaGuardia, and he you know, they park the plane literally right in the middle of the airfield. And then he takes a limo back down, you know, to his apartment. And then he's back out on the road the next day, and he does
That's
everything
cheating.
Almost from the plane.
That's
yeah,
not even
it is.
Fair. Well, no. So what are you going to be doing on Monday?
Well, we'll be at the broadcast center in Des Moines. There's like a convention center area. They're going to have all the networks are set up there. And we're obviously now an ABC News affiliate. And so we and I was for a long time over at the other place. And so I'm really used to, you know, traveling with these guys. And they put us in a corral area, and they bring the candidates or the surrogates or, you know, the experts, whatever it happens to be, to us. and they kind of, you know, circuit them through junket style, and it's actually it's pretty good. You get a real sense. I know Steve's going to have this in the morning, as you mentioned, and then we'll be doing it in the afternoon. And you know, you get a real sense from the people who are there, who want to make their final appeals. Some of the candidates do show up. It'll be interesting to see who does and who doesn't.
Yeah, I don't know that Trump is going to be out there. He's been out east. He was in Vermont, I think, on Friday. I don't know where he is today. It's kind
of
hard
Ben and Jerry's fan. He's coming. No, he's going to land. Now, this is very interesting. He's doing three campaign events in Iowa today. That's the first time he's ever done three in a day. The most he's ever done is two. And then, obviously, he's been averaging one. And he doesn't really need to do that many, because what happens is that everybody puts it on live, because, you know, you never know who he's going to insult or what he's going to say. And and it's like, it just, it, and so he gets a lot of coverage that way. But today it's three. He's landing, I believe, in Dubuque. I'll know that just in a second here, because of course CNN's got a live camera up waiting for him to land.
Really?
There's somebody they've tuned a guitar. He's going to have somebody sing, and he's, you know, and he's going to have the plane with his logo on it, you know, with his name on it, pull up behind him. So that's the backdrop.
Wow. So give me one last thing then. Give me some wisdom from Ro Khan about the Democrats and the Republicans. What's surprising you over the last few months?
Everything. There isn't a single thing that is not surprising about this. You know, we were just talking about it yesterday. I have never seen, and you know, we have on the show consistently people who are experts in the field, generally tradecraft experts, you know, like heads of the parties or former heads of the parties, people like that who can, you know, kind of look at this thing from 20,000 feet and trying to manage the circus that it has become. And, you know, to a man and a woman, everyone has said that this is the most unusual yeah. election cycle they have ever seen, anyone has ever seen, and it's completely unpredictable. I mean, if I were guessing, and we're all guessing, no one knows for sure what will happen, because I was always a bit of a mystery for all the reasons we talked about. But my guess is that I don't think Trump's going to win. I think that Trump's going to come in a close second.
And you're talking about the nomination?
No, I'm talking about Iowa at the moment.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he could still win the nomination. I think he's right now, you know, if you had to put money on it, he would be the favorite. There's no question about it at the moment. But in Iowa, I think he comes in a close second to Cruz, and then he fights about it. Because remember, in 2012, Rick Santorum won, but they didn't know it for 3 weeks.
Oh, was that close?
Because it was close. They had to they were waiting for ballots to come in from troops overseas and some of the other things. And then when all that came in, he had actually won. And so what Trump will argue, if he loses, Trump will argue that Iowa, you know, the system is screwed up, and that he clearly has won this thing. You just wait and you see, because he wants to maintain the momentum going into New Hampshire, which I think he will win, and South Carolina, I think he's got an excellent chance of winning. So we'll see. And on the Democratic side, I think that Hillary, I think a lot of this, I think people are protesting Hillary, who I think has been not a great candidate. She wasn't a great candidate in 2008, right? I mean,
yeah,
she'd be
right.
President now if she were. She was beaten by a first-term senator it was a great story, right? No question about it. And we in Chicago looked at it very differently.
She ran into one of the greatest candidates ever, though. I mean, you give her that.
Yeah.
Maybe she doesn't campaign well. There's some things she will never do well, that sort of interpersonal interaction or the authentic laugh that you want on a stage. Even if it's authentic, it doesn't feel right all the time. But Barack Obama was a rock star out there.
No question about that, John. But he also wasn't very well known around the country. I mean, we knew who he was, and I think in Chicago there was, you know, a lot of passion for him, right? Because he's from here, would potentially be the first African American president. There were all these factors that went into it. It was sort of a predestined thing, but he wasn't. You know, you got to remember he was kind of jittery. Remember, people will often forget this. His first couple of debates, he actually apologized for his performance. Because I think it was his second or third debate where it was kind of okay in the first one. And then the second or third, he totally bombed it. And he had to come back and say, well, you know, I kind of screwed that up. He wasn't a perfected candidate at that point. Hmm. And she had already been first lady. She'd been on she'd been doing this basically her whole professional life. And it was still to this moment. And I think there's other things, too. I don't think that the email scandal necessarily goes away.
Well, that just got worse yesterday.
Sure did. And I think Bernie Sanders is a protest moment. I don't think that anybody seriously thinks that Bernie Sanders is, with the exception of people who are very, 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 very in tune with his political philosophy.
I'm going to vote for him, Ro. I'm voting for Bernie Sanders because it's really going to be fun.
Well, I think a lot of people are doing that, John.
I want to be able to say I did. What the hell? Yeah. How often do you get a chance to vote for Bernie Sanders, for crying out
loud? Want me to pick you up a Sanders in Iowa t-shirt?
I want to feel the burn bumper sticker, my friend. You get me some tchotchkes for my boy, okay?
We're going to do our best.
All right. Have a great show. We'll be listening to Steve in the morning and then you in the afternoon. I just kind of wanted to touch bases with you guys. I'll talk to Steve later on, but have a great show, Rob.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.
Nice to hear you. Thanks for jumping on with us.
No problem.
A little after, well, it's about 1:18 now on WGN. This is John Williams. You know, we had planned for some time to play back our annual Jefferson show. We did one this summer, as it turns out. And, we've been sitting on the audio waiting for the right moment. And we thought, well, maybe this week would be a good weekend to just go back and play some of the memorable clips, some of the things that one of the founding fathers told us in this very political season. Okay, I've got a gem for you. After this on GM Radio. We had that conversation with Thomas Jefferson. We're going to do another one. In fact, we're going to do a couple of conversations with TJ later this year. So when I start pitching the Thomas Jefferson Experience and you've never been to it, you've never heard it, I want you to jump on those tickets later on. We won't worry about that right now. But when he was with us earlier last year, we were talking about the debates. We were talking about what it would be like if they had a debate, oh, I don't know, in, say, 1800.
I was watching the GOP debate the other night, and I wondered how awesome it would be to see Franklin and Jefferson and Washington and Madison and Monroe at the podiums debating or answering questions and stuff.
You know who would win would be Madison. Madison was a mere shrimp of a human being. he was a tiny little man, and he was all wrinkled up, and he was dour and grim. He wore black. He was all hunched together, and he had no charisma of any sort. And he spoke in this very self-swallowing sort of voice. And in any debate that he was ever in, he won because he had mastered the information more than anybody else in the room.
Well, I wonder who the Donald Trump of your era was then, because it wasn't you.
It wasn't I. I am a very poor public speaker and very shy. I was the first president to be inaugurated in Washington, but I was such a poor public speaker that I mumbled it. I mean, I just looked down and spoke in the quietest possible way. I said once I could not in public raise my voice above the level of a whisper, and so nobody could hear what it was that I was saying. People were mystified. They went out afterwards and bought copies. So if you think of Trump, there are really two people come closest in my lifetime. One is Patrick Henry, who had this bombastic manner. I once lent him a book. I shouldn't have. I'm very careful with my books. I never mark their pages. I never split the bindings. I treat them with the greatest reverence as sacred objects. And he borrowed a book. And 2 years later, I asked for it back. You know, that's a long time to borrow a book. And he finally gave it back to me, and it was soiled. It was damaged physically. But worse, when I opened it, back in the 18th century, books were printed in a different way. And so the sheets were sometimes folded, and you had to literally cut pages to open the book. Mm-hmm. You had a penknife, and you would cut the pages to take out the folds. The pages had not been cut. So not only did he ruin the book and keep it for 2 years, but he hadn't read it. He hadn't even read the book. If he had read it, I would have forgiven the rest, because books are books. But he could speak as nobody of our era. But he had no capacity to create a society. He could thrill a crowd and make them cry or laugh or want to riot, but he had no vision of what this country could actually be once he got the power he was seeking. The other person I would put in this category is another New Yorker, not Hamilton, another New Yorker, a very ambitious and powerful man, who had been engaged in a whole series of financial transactions, some of which had miscarried, and who had a long history of extraordinary relations with rich women, Aaron Burr.
Oh.
Aaron Burr and your Trump have a great deal in common, except that Aaron Burr was a consummate gentleman. You know what troubles me most about this is the boasting.
The boasting.
In my time, if I said, this country will be fine, I'm Jefferson, that would be the end of my candidacy, because people would rightly say, this man has fatal problems of ambition.
Right.
And self-regard. That, you know, the rule in my time, John, was that if you wanted to be the president of the United States, you at least had to pretend that you didn't. You had to say, oh, well, I mean, things are going very well for me at Monticello, and I would hate to lose my gardens, but if you really want me, and for a short period, and you can't find anyone better, and you want me to sort of fill in for a time, I'll hate every minute of it, but I can probably be persuaded to do it, but don't count on me to be any good at it. And, you know, I think that we regarded the presidency the way you regard jury duty. You do it because the country needs you, but you don't do it because you want it. And so if this Trump has self-love, you know, my view is that anyone who seeks the presidency should be denied it on principle.
That's our guy, Thomas Jefferson. So times have changed a little, eh? It's 129 on WGN. This is John Williams. We're going to pause here. We'll update you on news. Rob's got the very latest. We'll get you the forecast and stuff like that as well. And then the Mincing Rascals, Steve Bertrand, Eric Zorn, and Kristen McQuarrie have a few things to talk about, too. That's all coming up on the John Williams Show on WGN. Thank you, Rob. I didn't make a New Year's resolution this year. Did you? Are you trying to do something this year, Rob?
I always believe that if you want to improve yourself, you should always start now. Don't wait until January 1st, because you'll just keep kicking the can down the road.
Actually, I'll take that back, though. I did sort of resolve. Eric Zorn challenged people to do something for 10 minutes a day that would be self-improving or improve the world. So I am trying to do something 10 minutes every day. And that is right. I'm trying to write for 10 minutes a day, which you think, well, who doesn't have 10 minutes? But if you want to write for 10 minutes and make it meaningful or get better at the craft, it's better if you don't do it at 11:50 in the evening when you're tired, you know. So then it's always finding the time and budgeting, and then finding something to write about. So that's been my little project. But the resolution I didn't make, and maybe I should have, was that this year I'm not going to cede my happiness to the performance of my favorite sports team. For instance, the Butler Bulldogs lost today to Marquette. A lot of Marquette fans in the Chicago area, happy for you. But I'm a little down right now, Rob. I'm not there yet. I'm not over letting my team dictate my mood.
I know what you mean. I've been the White Sox have not been a particularly fun team to follow since I don't know, July of 2012, and every summer I keep saying to myself, I'm not going to let this team dictate how I feel. It's nice out. I'm alive. Yeah. I live in America. Why are these people making me upset? And every time I just keep coming back to that. I don't know what type of hold they have on me, but if you know any cult deprogrammers, I love to take advantage of their services.
Yeah, boy, pardon me. Here, I thought I was sad, but if I was a big White Sox fan, I don't know how I'd be able to get along.
And this is the first year in eight I have not gone to Sox Fest, and I drink whatever they're ladling out every year, and I'm a little more cynical now, but that little twinge, I guess there's nothing wrong with having sports hope, is there?
No.
Because it's the one thing that you can have hope in, and there are no consequences related to it. It's harmless. You can buy into it, and nothing really happens to you or your family. But
that's true.
Allowing yourself to have the Butler Bulldogs dictate how you feel. And I remember you were on that bus long before many other people. Remember
the
Butler Bulldog updates 7 years ago.
Yes.
And we resolved to do it, yet we always fail.
Well, something to work on. All right. So thank you for that, Rob.
You're welcome. I'm here with you.
A little perspective isn't a bad thing. Let's do this. So if you go to Facebook and find me there, I'm King John on Facebook. We post every Friday an increasingly popular podcast called The Mincing Rascals, where Eric Zorn, Kristen McQuarrie, they from the Chicago Tribune, our Steve Bertrand and I sit down and talk about things in the news, everything from Wi-Fi on Metro trains and panhandlers at Daily Plaza to the big political story of the day. And so we today will play back part of yesterday's podcast that we recorded. This is a few minutes long. It's the gang talking a little bit about Donald Trump, but also about Hillary and Bernie. I'm glad we got to that as well. So let's pick it up with my asking them a question I actually hadn't in a while. Who do you think is going to win the Republican nomination? Kristen McQuarrie, go.
Trump.
Eric Zorn.
Well, I'd have to say Trump at this point.
That's all you get to say. Okay. Bertrand.
Donald Trump.
I still say Rubio, but that's me being more hopeful now than practical.
Well,
if
I can just jump in about Trump's decision to skip the debate. A lot of people were playing it on the post-debate analysis last night as a smart move by Trump, that he came out looking strong and defiant. I don't think that's the case. I think he ended up looking weak. I thought his event to help veterans was cynical, and I just don't think it helped. I saw some coverage that Ronald Reagan skipped his last debate before Iowa back in 1980 because he thought he had the debate in hand. He had thought the race in hand, and he ended up losing to George W. Bush.
Wait a minute. Are you talking about the Nashua, I paid for this microphone event?
No, I'm talking
something
about
different.
Iowa. I'm talking about Iowa. And I just don't think it's a smart move to skip debates.
I did. I thought if Fox News put out a press release like they did about Donald Trump, I mean, I think Fox News was totally stepping over the line. They were being snarky and unobjective. We would never do that at the Tribune, put out we would put out a statement defending, you know, Megyn Kelly or Eric Zorn in a professional manner. I wouldn't have shown up at the debate either.
Okay,
he raised $6 million for veterans. I mean, really, you're going to find a window of criticism in that?
Yeah, you called that cynical, Eric?
Yeah, it was cynical. It definitely was. I mean, there are veterans groups that really resent him being used as a political pawn like that. But I think that it doesn't look good for him not to be there. These press releases from Fox came out after he expressed reservations about being there. It wasn't like they just sent out a news release saying, here comes the debate, and
he tweeted out a little poll, should I go? And their reaction was to send out a snarky press release that said, in case you didn't read it, we've learned from a secret back channel that the Ayatollah and Putin both intend to treat Donald Trump unfairly when they meet with him if he becomes president. A nefarious source tells us that Trump has his own secret plan to replace the cabinet with his Twitter followers to see if he should even go to those meetings. I mean, that is just this. We are talking about a national news network. I just thought they were totally out of line.
They were completely out of line. But still, the question is whether this serves him in trying to get the nomination.
I don't think that was Roger Ailes, by the way. That was some 23.
Well, I think you're probably right about that, but it doesn't matter.
And it's not atypical of their statements. I guess that's what they do. So I think it was kind of wise for him not to be there because he is being challenged by Ted Cruz in Iowa. And now Ted Cruz was the biggest punching bag on the stage. So in a way, he protects himself from any major screw-ups, and he subjects his closest rival to the punches from the minions who were there.
Fox also said that he demanded or asked for $5 million to go to the charity of his choice, maybe that veterans group, in order for him to appear. They said they're not paying him anything, so that. Plus the fact that he said it was really hard for Megyn Kelly when, after the last debate, she and he tangled, and he would hate to have her go through that again.
What a gentleman. He's a giver.
We are about to elect a 9-year-old. It's stunning. It gets stunninger every week to me that he says stuff like that.
But he's a 9-year-old savant because
he is.
He is. I mean, everything he does seems to work out for him. I'm interested in this blaming the media thing now, and You know, they're coming down on Megyn Kelly for her question in the first debate about how he treats women and his views towards women. I still don't think her initial questioning of him was out of line
at
all.
It wasn't out of line. He has said all of those things. I mean, he reacted ridiculously. I will say, though, the first hour were kind of, the moderators didn't talk about a single issue. They were just trying to get the panelists to spar with each other. The first question was about Trump, even though he wasn't there. I thought Ted Cruz looked bad. I thought he seemed petulant. He said at one point, geez, you know, the last four questions have been, please attack Ted. This is a debate. It's supposed to be a policy issue. Gosh, if you ask one more mean question, I might have to leave the stage.
I think he wrote that. I think he came into the debate with that.
I think he did, too.
He thought it was going to be funny, and it's not being played as funny.
He was trying to position himself as, now I'm the big dog. Well, look, and here's what's happening.
I think he thought he was making a joke.
I took it as a joke. I did.
Did you?
Yeah,
I don't think a lot of people are taking it as a joke.
He doesn't have comedic timing then. I just thought it sounded...
you think?
Like, given his little...
When I think of comedians, I do not think of Ted Cruz.
I don't know. He's kind of funny.
I saw something on Twitter that I really liked. The guy said, Ted Cruz looks like the gym teacher who yells at you until you start crying and then yells at you for crying.
Here's my thing. Wow. I remember when Richard Gephardt, the Missouri congressman, ran for president. And I don't know if it would have been... I don't know exactly if he ran in 2008 or when it was, but he'd bowed out early in the primaries, before Iowa or right after Iowa or something. I think he was banking on Iowa. And I remember after where the pundits and everyone said, you know, he's just a great guy. He's a wonderful guy, and he deserved better. And I'm thinking at the time, why, if you know him and you believe that, what's wrong with saying that in the beginning, you know, before he loses? This guy's a great guy. I can't believe how many pundits are saying, yeah, Ted Cruz is not likable. Nobody likes Ted Cruz. I mean, they're totally, there seems to be this ability to just, on the part of the pundits and reporters and others, just say, yeah, this is a guy who no one likes.
I don't know that it's even a personality issue, though. I mean, he is really harsh in his policy positions, too. I mean, when they got into discussion about immigration and they talked about this amendment that he introduced at one point, that was basically a poison pill to what had been a reasonable compromise in immigration reform. And his amendment was this: anyone who is here illegally is permanently ineligible for citizenship. I mean, that is just so far out of the mainstream of what Americans, I think, believe. And so it's not just his personality. It's his strident policy positions.
By the way, Steve, at the end of our debate last week, you said, gee, I was hoping that we were going to talk about Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. Was there something on your mind this week or last that you wanted to say about the Democratic
side?
Well,
it shows you how quickly things change. But last week, as we sat down, was just when his Simon & Garfunkel ad came out.
Which,
you know,
was brilliant,
to look for America,
by the way.
And it was,
yeah.
It, you know, gave me goosebumps.
Me too.
It took you 4 days to hitchhike from Saginaw? That's a terrible hitchhiking
record. And by the way,
it's
a terrible way to vote for president. What, vote for Bernie Sanders because you like that Simon & Garfunkel song?
And maybe it's a terrible way, but it's, you know, and it's easier because he's in the party in power, so he can't go negative like the party out of power would. But, you know, at least he's giving his supporters something to believe in, something to lift them up.
And what is that?
A great 60s song. No, you know what? It may be. I'm not even going to argue.
Money rains from heaven.
Some of the memes out there about Bernie's positions are pretty funny.
The math does not exist. We are $18 trillion right. In debt. We can't have his Medicare for all.
So he's the liberal version of Donald Trump when Trump says we'll build the wall and Mexico will pay for it, right?
Yeah, but we're not going to get his medical plan any more than we're going to get Donald Trump's wall. So I am more concerned about income inequality in this country than I am ISIS and immigration. What Bernie is talking about is, I think, much more relevant to everybody.
He's a 74-year-old socialist. He's secular. If he gets nominated, he's going to lose all 50 states. The
Sanders.
Republicans have been very nice to him because they are hoping, they've got their fingers crossed that he's nominated. Because they will, no matter who they nominate.
Don't you think the same way that Democrats want Trump to win?
Oh, yes.
Yes. I mean, they are both appealing to the same cause. They're both looked at as genuine, authentic. They're tapping into frustration. I mean, as far apart as they are on issues, Trump and Bernie, they're similar.
Except Sanders, I think, is younger. The support. I mean, I've got two very young voters in my house, you know, are feeling the burn. You know, and I was talking to my son about it. He goes, well, why couldn't Bernie Sanders win? I said, 8 years ago, the Republicans who hated President Obama were trying to call him a socialist. Bernie Sanders calls himself a socialist. I mean,
don't,
you know, he takes
Steve, I hope you're not blowing out that little candle, because I'm serious about that. I think we have to stop worrying about the label.
I agree with you, John, but the voters aren't going to agree with you.
We won't.
It is just impractical. I mean,
we saved the banks.
We don't use the word, John. We don't use that word.
Businesses that we thought were too big to fail. We took money from the taxpayers and we gave it to private companies. It's just a label.
And I'm for universal health care coverage. I like the idea of extending the public education model up through college. I like the things that he says. I just feel like that the cost of nominating him for president is going to be four to eight more years of a Republican in the White House appointing Supreme Court justices. And I mean, I hate to be like hard-headed and cynical about it.
You know, John, the word liberal has been banned in politics now.
Yeah,
people are progressive. They're not liberal. Just imagine socialist. You know, if we can't utter the word liberal now,
I'm going to vote for him just to spite that notion.
Just to spite us.
Yeah, you're right, Eric. Just to spite you guys. That's part of our Mincing Rascals podcast, that and the rest of it. We moved on to Chicago and Illinois topics, among other things. And then we always close with our recommendations, something the gang has been enjoying individually, reading, listening to, or watching. That's the Mincing Rascals. You can download it, of course, and have it as a podcast feed right into your phone, free every week. Or just go to WGNplus.com or check me out on Facebook. I'm King John there. We'll pause here. This is WGN. About 5 minutes before the news here, I got just a couple of minutes after Rob's news. We'll say hi to Steve Cochran, who's also getting ready to head out to Iowa. We started the show talking a little bit with Ro Khan in the afternoon. Steve's going to do his morning show out there as well, so we'll connect with Mr. C after the 2 o'clock edition of WGN Radio News. But since we're on kind of this presidential theme today, let me just play for you a little bit more of my conversation with Thomas Jefferson from last year. We were talking to TJ in this one instance about voting and about the Supreme Court and that Citizens United decision.
The principle of the United States, of our republic, is that every person is as important as every other person with respect to our political choices. And so, let's say the richest man in America is sitting here and the poorest man in America is sitting here. Under our system, we should each get one vote. And that makes me equal to you in that very important respect. So if you create artificial excrescences on that process, which give you effectively 10 votes, 100 votes, 1,000 votes, or 1,000,000 votes, if you can buy votes, if you can coerce your employees, if you have access to the modes of persuasion that I don't have, it effectively removes the principle of one man, one equal vote. And so I've never liked the Supreme Court anyway, madam. I don't think the Supreme Court should have the power to veto acts of Congress. Judicial review, I remind you, is not a principle that's inscribed in the Constitution of the United States. You can read the Constitution backwards and forwards, and you will never find the concept of judicial review. That 9 unelected, unaccountable, and unimpeachable beings should be able to lord it over 330 million human beings in your time is obscene and appalling, and you should not put up with it. The problem with Supreme Court justices is that they have life tenure. You know, once they're appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate, they serve for life. And as I said during my first term, few die and none resign. The life expectancy in my time was about 40.
Right.
In your time, if someone's appointed to the court in his 30s, he could serve 60 years. That's 3 or 4 generations. And so I wanted the courts to be the court of highest appeal. I wanted them to advise about constitutional questions, but not to have veto power. And I said we should have a system of votes of confidence or no confidence every 5 or 10 or 15 years, so that at least the senile can be retired.
Yeah, don't get him started on Supreme Court justices. That's our friend Thomas Jefferson. He's coming back to town. We're going to have a couple of shows this year. Don't hold me to the exact dates on this, but figure one again in the summer and one again in the fall, and we'll keep you posted. WGN Radio News coming up next. Thank you, Rob. This is John Williams. By the way, you had the story about the judge saying don't wear pajamas to my courtroom, right?
Yes.
That's just not in your self-interest, you know? I mean, maybe it shouldn't matter how you appear. I have mixed feelings about that. But how dumb are you if you're wearing your sweatpants or your gym jams when you're trying to catch a break from a judge? That's just bad advertising?
I don't know. There, I was in traffic court a couple of years ago, and I was the only, this was in Chicago, and I was the only person who was not wearing a Brian Urlacher jersey. I don't know if maybe I missed a memo, but for some reason, people are very casual in court for some reason.
I am not. Whenever, I'll tell you, whenever, especially if it's like murder or something, whenever I'm before a judge, I've got a tie on. I am Mr. Yes, sir, no, sir, thank you, sir. That's the way I play it. I think there was a story out of, I think it was England, and it was this past week also. The principal doesn't want the parents dropping the kids off at school or going into the school with their sweatpants or pajama bottoms on. You know, you get up in the morning, you throw the kids in the car, and then you got to run into the school maybe. And the principal said, I don't want to see you disrespecting the school, the faculty, and the students dressing disheveled. So don't even come into the school building. You shouldn't even be dropping your kids off dressed the way you are.
When I was not nearly as productive earlier this year, I made a vow to myself that I was going to wear pants with a belt, because at the very least, that was my one concession to being productive.
Boy, you got to aim high, but you were that was the low bar, I guess.
That was the low bar.
Putting on a belt was a big day for you.
Yes.
It was
not the sweatpants that tied. It was an actual belt.
All right, let's bring Steve Cochran into this mix. Steve, you don't have to join that conversation, but do you have anything to say to us, sir?
Well, I agree with you about court, but I'm surprised I hadn't heard about your murder charge. Because
Rob let that go right by. I thought that was nice of him. What a team, what a team player that Rob Hart is.
I'm just glad you got off. Bad evidence find, or what happened there?
I'm not going to talk about it. I do want to read you something, though. Do you mind?
No, go ahead.
Steve Cochran's on the line. He's getting ready to head out to Iowa. We started the show today talking with Ro Khan, who's going to be out there in the afternoon on Monday. You're going to be doing your show there Monday morning, right, Steve?
Monday and Tuesday, actually.
Oh, 2 days. Oh, even better. Okay, so I'm going to read to you what Wikipedia says an Iowa caucus is.
Okay,
it's just
ready.
A short paragraph. The Iowa caucus is an electoral event in which residents of the U.S. state of Iowa meet in precinct caucuses in all of Iowa's 1,681 precincts and elect delegates to the corresponding county conventions. There are 99 counties in Iowa, and thus there are 99 conventions. These county conventions then select delegates for both of Iowa's congressional district conventions and the state convention, which eventually choose the delegates for the presidential nominating conventions. I had to go back and... Okay, do you see my point? Do I need to say anything else?
I don't think I'm going to go.
I don't think you can use a word in the definition of a word, but never mind that. What is that, Steve?
Well, you know, there's two sides to this. One is the argument that Iowa and New Hampshire get way too much credit and way too much publicity, but that system's not going to change anytime soon. So this whole battle, this Eric Edelstein, who is a very influential political guy in Illinois, on Thursday told me, and I don't know if you knew this number, 16% is the high water mark for registered Iowa voters to actually caucus. Now, if you go by that paragraph, you can understand why, because there's not enough Advil in Iowa to cover the headache that would give you. But it's more than just going in to vote. You got to commit the evening to it, and a lot of people just aren't willing to do it.
So as a result, you get very liberal Democrats who are committed to a cause. And my understanding is, Steve, you also get very conservative Christians on the other side.
You get the far right and the far left, and they're not the solution, they're the problem. So everybody in the middle tends to stay out of it, and nothing's really going to change until the middle gets actively involved in the process, because all the publicity that comes off of whoever wins on Monday night, they'll take that into New Hampshire, and then they'll roll through that into South Carolina and Nevada and beyond. But if you believe what we've seen this week, and again, this may be wishful thinking, because I've been praying for a bus to injure Trump, not kill him, just, you know, just
you want him to get hit by a bus. Wow, that's thoughtful. I mean, that's creative. I like that.
Yeah, I don't want him dead. I just want him, you know, out of the process. But Trump didn't come close in ratings for his little skip the debate dance on Thursday night. The debate actually drew about 12 million people. And the Trump dance card was about 3 million people. So that was a good sign. But it all comes down to turnout. It comes completely down to turnout and who shows up. And if the Trump people, I don't care how many people go to a Trump rally, if they don't show up to caucus Monday night, he doesn't win.
Yeah, well, I wonder, because everybody talks about Hillary eventually lapping Bernie when she gets to South Carolina, but I wonder where the break point will be for Donald Trump. You know, does he, because he doesn't have maybe the organization, he doesn't have the boots on the ground, he doesn't have a history of guys and gals he calls and says, hey, remember when we did it 4 years ago? Let's get the band together again. I wonder when that catches up with him, if at all.
Well, and I'm sure you've talked about this, but the really amazing thing that I can't get beyond, because I've been wrong about Trump the entire time, is are people so upset with the process and so upset with the government not getting anything done that they'll latch onto Trump because they truly believe he can? Because you know this. You spend 5 minutes in a civics class in elementary or middle school, you still have to have Congress involved. That's why we have three branches of government. And there's nothing that Donald Trump has advocated that he can get done or we can afford to do. It's just bluster. And he told the New York Times editorial board Thursday or Friday that he says outrageous things just to get people interested or keep their attention. And, you know, he's saying that out loud. Is that the kind of president you want? It's just stunning to me that people are lining up in 20-degree Iowa weather to come in and see this guy shoot his mouth off.
Yeah, well, I think it's a show. I don't think he's going to be the president. I also don't think he's going to be the nominee. But you're right about at least he's tapped into some sort of anger. And I've been wrong about it all along, too. And a little surprised. And frankly, Steve, embarrassed. I've actually been sad about this process this time.
Well, you know what I'd hope is that it does, because he has created a conversation, but I hope that conversation is more than just Trump. I hope the conversation is, yeah, the system is broken, and Congress wasn't elected to do nothing. They were elected to do something. And as much as you might dislike Barack Obama, if you're a Republican or certainly a right-wing Republican, once you get the job, and Barack Obama admitted this, once you get the job, it's a little harder than it looks.
Well, what do you think about Trump? Do you think he actually wants to be president?
I don't. I absolutely don't. No, I don't. First off, it's a hell of a pay cut. And secondly, the amount of business he's already destroyed for his brand is insane. He's burned a ton of bridges. So it's you know, you could assume he's 69 years old. Maybe he's not worth $10 billion. Maybe he's worth $1 billion. It's a lot of money. But maybe he's bored enough that this has been a dream forever that he wants to fulfill. But I think every day that goes on, he's more desperate to find an out for this thing, because I can't imagine that he actually wants the gig.
I asked Ro a little while ago, what's most surprising to you about the last few months? He said everything. You know, Bernie and Hillary, you didn't think it was going to play out this way. And certainly Trump he hasn't imploded, and I thought he would. And then to make it more interesting this week, they say Michael Bloomberg might run, another billionaire in the hunt. How about that?
Well, that's the thing. The Democrat side in some ways is even more interesting, because not only is Bernie Sanders not going away, if Sanders wins in Iowa and New Hampshire, the Nevada caucus is third on their schedule, and then they go to South Carolina. Now, you can make assumptions for all the right and wrong reasons that Bernie Sanders can't win in South Carolina, but he could certainly win in Nevada. And if Hillary goes 0-2 or 0-3, Bloomberg's already said he'll jump in. He said he won't run against Hillary, but he'd absolutely run against Bernie Sanders. But
but he would run as an independent either way, right?
Yeah, he would get in, because there's rules about how you get on ballots in these states, and those dates have passed. But you could see a brokered convention on either side. So when we get to the conventions in the summer, you could see huge arguments that you haven't had since Taft Roosevelt. Teddy, by the way, where you're talking about delegates being released. Everybody goes back to, I don't know if you remember, like in 1980, there was, for a 10-minute period, there was a Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan ticket that was talked about, with Ford being the VP after he was president 4 years before. And he, of course, turned it down. But it would be way beyond that. It'd be way beyond Ted Kennedy and the convention in 76. It would be an argument to release all the delegates and turn the process upside down. And there's a lot of people who live in this world every day who say, honestly, it's exactly what we need. Because between redistricting in the states, which is a huge problem in Illinois, and everything else that's gone on politically or not gone on, in a lot of ways, it's time to blow it up.
So you're going to be out there on Monday and Tuesday in broadcast row, I guess, and then kick around town a little bit while you're out there as well?
We're going to a Trump rally tomorrow night. Can I get you a Let's Make America Great Again hat?
Well, I told Ro I want the Feel the Burn bumper sticker, if you could get me, so I guess as an equal opportunity talk show host, yeah, I would love that footnote in history. If you can get me any authentic Donald Trump tchotchke, I would thank you greatly, Steve.
It'll go nicely on your trophy case right next to that piece of paper that said you're off the hook on the murder charge, which I'm really happy for.
Yeah, time's up. That's our friend Steve Cochran. All right, so Monday morning and Tuesday morning in Iowa. Steve, thanks for popping in with us this afternoon.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
Yeah, have a good shows. Let's pause here. It's kind of a presidentially themed John Williams show. Still to come, our Vibe Score segment, where we score the news, and it'll be movies and music and sports and all of the things we talk about when we go through Vibe Score. But since we are on this presidential kick this afternoon, we go back to our last Thomas Jefferson show. What does he make of this circus? Once again, 200 years later, he's very telling. Coming up on WGN. Okay, so this goes back to our last Thomas Jefferson show, and it is interesting, isn't it, as we're trying to contemplate who the next president is going to be and just watching the process. Well, what was it like for the founding fathers? A little while ago, we played for you what a debate would have sounded like if Jefferson and Adams and the rest of them were up there. When we last visited with Thomas Jefferson on stage in Chicago at the College of DuPage, I asked him to tell us at least a little bit about the writing of the Declaration of Independence. It's a story he has told to you before. But when he does, you sort of remember what it's all about being an American.
I was an exceedingly shy man, almost painfully shy. And John Adams, for example, said that during the entire time that I was in the Second Continental Congress, he never heard me make three sentences together in public. I was really a scholar and a very retired sort of man. And when I was asked to write the Declaration of Independence, I tried to avoid it because I felt that it should be done by somebody much more prominent. And even when it was adopted by the 13 original states on the 4th of July, 1776, it was not widely known that I was its author. In fact, it wasn't until the election of 1800, when I stood against John Adams, that the American people understood for the first time that I had been the principal author of that instrument. Nobody could have anticipated that it would become the most famous document in American history. And frankly, if the other members of the Continental Congress had known that, I would not have received the assignment.
They would have wanted the notoriety for themselves.
John Adams, for example, who was a very close friend of mine, and we had an extraordinary relationship that lasted for 50 years. But later, when the Declaration of Independence became famous, he wrote, not to me, but to others, letters grumbling about my role in it. He said a number of things. He said, first of all, I, John Adams, could have written it if I had wanted to. Adams was a great man, but he was envious of everybody else of the revolutionary generation. And I think Franklin actually said it best when Dr. Franklin said of Adams, always a good man, occasionally a great man, not infrequently insane.
We'll do him a solid here. How would he have written We Hold These Truths? Or how would Adams have opened the Declaration?
What's famous, of course, about the Declaration of Independence in your time is the preamble. I suppose I should say this. If someone else had written the Declaration of Independence, it would be an important document, but it probably wouldn't be this document. For example, and I mean no disrespect, but if George Washington had written the Declaration of Independence, he probably would have said something like, "We're tired of England, do we quit?" He was very much to the point.
You could get that in a tweet.
You could get that in the tweet of a tweet. If John Adams, who could have, as I said, written the Declaration of Independence, had done so, and again, I mean no disrespect, but it probably would have been a pamphlet of 40 or 50 pages. There would have been long arguments about constitutional theory and footnotes and marginalia attacking his enemies and a series of self-justifications and jargon and theory. I mean, it quite literally could have been 20, 40, or 50 pages. And if Even if James Madison, who was too young at the time, he was my closest friend in life and the greatest of my proteges, but if James Madison had written the Declaration of Independence, he couldn't have said what I said, because he was always more grounded and more realistic and, to a certain degree, more pessimistic than I was. And so I said, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Madison, I think, would have written this. We feel reasonably certain that under certain carefully controlled social and political circumstances, most white males can be considered equal in some limited regards. See footnotes. What I wrote was beyond our capacity to incorporate it. Madison would have written would have been the best, accurate, and realistic thing that could be said under the circumstances. And I leave it to you, and I mean this with the greatest humility, which do you prefer as your nation's mission statement, realism or the dream of becoming the most extraordinary people who ever walked the face of the earth? That's what I think I brought to it, that level of aspiration.
And optimism, too. Thank you, Mr. Jefferson. This is John Williams. So that was obviously recorded from a previous conversation we had 200 years ago. I mean, last year. It's kind of fun that we can bring him back and ask him to tell us a little bit about the world we live in now. Today, we thought we'd play back some of those comments because Steve and Roe are heading out to Iowa on Monday, and it sure has been a political season. If nothing else, now we finally get to do something about this. All of these debates and town hall meetings and endless talking about this, you know, it's time to pee or get off the pot, isn't it? So at least some kind of voting, something is going to happen on Monday, and we'll get maybe some sense of all of this. WGN Radio News, Rob Hart does that next. You know what cyber squatting is, right? Where you own a domain name and hope that somebody's going to come along and want it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you hear what happened to Google.com?
No.
A guy was able to buy Google.com. Google accidentally sold it for $12.
Oops.
Last October. You know, you can register names at Google.com. They have their own, I guess, platform where you can buy, I don't know if you buy .net or whatever, but anyway, Google accidentally sold for $12 Google.com to a guy who used to work for the company and figured out how to sort of exploit their software. And I don't know if their contract lapsed or what, but, you know, if you don't re-register it, then somebody else can buy it from under you. Anyway, the guy bought Google.com from them. And he owned it for a minute. How much do you think that was worth? So then Google calls him and they say, hey, listen, we canceled the sale. I'm not sure that, you know, he could have fought that in court. I don't know how that goes. But they said, we'll pay you a reward if you just give it back. How much did he get from Google to get Google.com back? What would you guess?
I'm going to guess he got $100,000.
He got $6,006.13.
Ooh.
Now, here's the trivia question for you. Write that down, and then tell me, why did they give him $6,006.13?
Oh, because it says it's Google on the calculator.
It is. So that's clever, but
that
I'm still
clever.
Thinking, yeah, that's clever. You're worth billions and zillions of dollars. How about $6,600,130?
Yes, Google.
Google is supposed to mean like endless zeros, isn't it?
So, yeah. You should have asked for a Googleplex.
Well, so when he... Exactly. So when he said to them, okay, he said, I'm going to donate the money to charity anyway. Apparently, this guy wasn't in it for the money. He said, I'm going to give the money to charity. You know what Google then did?
They upped it.
They doubled the award, which is still a very small amount of money. So now some charity, I guess, of this guy's choosing gets $12,012.26, which doesn't spell anything. But that's pretty stunning, isn't it, that Google let their domain name slip away to a guy who owned it for, they said, a minute. I owned re-elect Al Gore. Remember when, I know you remember, so Gore didn't win the election.
Yes.
He won the popular vote, but not the electoral vote or the general vote or whatever. So I thought, if he runs again, a great website, a great bumper sticker would be re-elect Al Gore. You get it? Because that would remind people, hey, you really did vote for me last time.
Uh-huh.
I just didn't get to be president. So re-electalgore.com I owned for a year. It cost me $100. I thought that would have been really great, because if he decided to run, then he would have come around. He would have said, holy cow, some knucklehead's got it. And I would have said, yeah, he sure does. Well, how much is that worth to you?
And then in 2002, when he said he wasn't going to run again, your dreams were dashed
on
the rocks.
I stopped renewing the subscription to it. I guarantee you that. But I knew before then, because shortly after he got elected, shortly after he didn't win the election, he appeared on Saturday Night Live, and he did a hot tub scene with his shirt off. It was not a flattering picture, skit, or image. And when I saw him in that skit, I thought, oh, my God, he's not going to run again.
It's all
over.
I knew then.
I thought, oh, no, this is a man who's made up his mind. I'm not going to do that again. And now I'm taking off my shirt and getting into a hot tub on Saturday Night Live. All right, so let's do this. It's 2:40 on WGN. Saturdays at this time, we do our Vibe Score segment, where we score the news, and we always start with a song.
Let us be lovers, together.
Of course, this is more than a song, isn't it? This is the Bernie Sanders ad that uses Simon and Garfunkel's America. And so we asked you on Vibe Score, a free app that you can download right now. It's one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E, and you follow groups. We feed you stories and videos about them, and then you score the news. So we said, okay, that Bernie Sanders commercial we just sent you, 1 to 100, score that, please. And it got an 83. I think I gave it low 90s. It gave me the chills. I loved that commercial. Our producer is Griffin. What did you score the Bernie Sanders ad?
Sorry?
What'd you score the ad, Griff?
I was...
Were you on board?
Yeah, I was in 85. I think on Mincing Rascals, somebody made the comment that, what does this really say about Bernie? And I guess I can see that, but it kind of reminded me of what Thomas Jefferson was saying earlier, aspirational view of America. It made you feel good.
Oh, yeah. It made you feel good about America. It didn't tell you anything about Bernie Sanders.
Okay, but what does any of these commercials really tell you about a candidate? They only have 30 seconds.
It didn't even tell you anything negative about the other candidates, which is really why I think you love it.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
If nothing else, you go, oh, America, yeah. And then, but imagine if Donald Trump had run that commercial. You'd feel better about Donald Trump, maybe.
Or... I don't think so.
That's a stretch.
Okay, he wouldn't have gotten the song, though.
Right, yeah, that's right. Art Garfunkel would not have let... Art Garfunkel issued a 9-point letter as to why he let them use his song.
Yeah.
And not one of the points made any sense. It was the goofiest thing you've ever read.
Donald Trump is welcome to use a Ted Nugent song and do a similar commercial, but...
Wait a minute, what are you talking about?
I'm saying that that's the only artist that he could get the music from. Never
oh, yeah,
mind.
Right. All right, Decker, what did you score the Bernie Sanders America spot?
I scored it an 88 for
88.
The feel-good reason.
Yeah, I mean,
I watched it, I felt good. I didn't go, ew, like I usually do with a political ad that's negative or yelling or the big voice guy.
You know where I think we really missed it? So on Vibe Score, we also had Sarah Palin's sweater that she wore over a week ago now when she announced for Donald Trump. And people scored the sweater a 47. I think if Tina Fey was the only one to ever wear that sweater, we would have loved it.
But she wasn't.
Yeah, but we specifically said in the question, we're not asking you how you feel about Sarah Palin. How about that sweater? It looks great. The question didn't say it looks great, but we said, how about that sweater? 47.
I think if it was on Kendall Jenner, maybe higher. But because it was on Sarah Palin, not her personally, but like an older mom type, I think that brings down the coolness factor of the sweater.
Oh, I see. You think maybe she was a little old for the spangly thing?
Yeah.
I think it's a real transference thing, though, where if you like that song and that video, you feel good about Bernie Sanders. If you don't like Sarah Palin, there's that poor sweater thinking, what did I do wrong? I'm just a sweater. I'm getting a 47. That's what the sweater is thinking.
So what we need is like a picture of that sweater on the back of a chair.
Yes. Or just on somebody else.
Exactly. They're playing ping pong with soccer balls. There's a new game out there. We told you about it and actually showed you this game being played. It does not look like fun to me. 1 to 100, do you want to play?
You need to explain, though, they're headbutting the soccer ball back and forth.
Yeah.
Not with like a big paddle or something.
Oh, yeah, right. That's right. They're
or your feet. It's all exclusively headbutts.
Over a little net on a table, right, Griff?
Yeah.
31 it's getting. I scored it a 10. I don't even want to watch people play that
Why
game.
Not? Oh. That video was so cool.
Yeah, I scored it low on actually playing it, but then I put in the comments. But I give it a 95 for watching, like entertainment value.
It was very fun to watch.
Like beer pong is, I guess. I don't know. Really? Really, guys?
Come on.
Hey, look at Megyn Kelly's
Jackass
number.
Was a huge hit, okay?
Megyn Kelly got a 69 this week. If we put a picture up, we should do this under the fashion category. Just grab an image from the last debate that she emceed or asked questions in. You know her hair and how she had it pulled back? I thought she just looked beautiful, just gorgeous. I would give her a fashion score very high. And her overall, this is kind of like a Q score for politicians and newscasters. Her overall vibe score right now is 69. That's not bad. That's
for being a Fox News anchor, I'm impressed with her score.
What did you give her, John?
I gave her an 82 or 3 after the Vanity Fair piece. And, you know, she just seems to be a little more fair and balanced than I first thought she was. So I gave her a good score.
I gave her a good score, too, because she seemed to be more researched and not as Fox Newsy.
Well, she is smart. And, you know, those candidates are all trying to push her around, and she pushes right back. Almost too much, but she held her own, that's for sure.
I do appreciate her debate performance and sticking up to Trump in the way that she has, but it doesn't change that I disagree with her on literally everything. Like, if you actually watch her show, it's the same stuff, and she is good in those debates, I can't deny, but I still went very low, like 15.
There's some pushback in the movie category on vibe score. There's some pushback on the diversification of the Academy that votes for the Oscars. Did you see the guy that played little Will Rogers on Lost in Space, Bill Mumy? He had a letter to the Hollywood Reporter this week, and he said, you know, I'm sorry, I'm a white male. He's about 60 now. He said, I've had a great career. I haven't been real active lately. But really, I'm not good enough to vote anymore. He said this is a reverse kind of racism. There's this pushback now. I'm sorry, Griff. I know you hate this topic and the way it's being
debated. Here's the deal, guy. Sorry, you can't be in the Academy anymore. Those are the rules now. I'm sorry. That's how I feel.
So the question on VibeScore was, how do you feel about the diversification movement of the Academy? And 100 is you think it's awesome, and 0 you think it's a bad idea. They're going in the wrong direction. It's getting a 70. I think that's an interesting number because you'd think it would be higher. 70 to me is a low number, Griffin. I think you can at least take heart in that.
Yeah, well, it's all perspective because I was expecting lower. I thought there'd be more pushback, but people were pleased mostly with the changes that they made. So I was expecting lower. You were expecting higher.
I think I do like the way they're doing it, although maybe a little too swiftly. We'll see how it all shakes out. After the snowstorm out east, did you see the video of the guy snowboarding behind a car, you know, with the tow rope down?
I love that.
I do, too. And it's probably against the law, and he didn't have a helmet on. People were just so elated to see it. It's a really fun video. And so that's getting an 88. I gave it a 95. Who wouldn't, right?
At the end of that clip, the cops pull up and they're like, listen, we got a couple complaints, so we're going to pretend like we're trying to stop this, but it's clearly so fun. Why would you?
We used to do that in my small town, and we called it hillbilly skiing.
Really?
Yeah.
No kidding.
You just hang on to the back of a truck bumper. You don't have the skis, but you like just skid along in the snow on your feet.
And I'm sure your parents didn't. Are they hearing about this for the first time now, Kristen?
If they're listening, then yes.
And you didn't have a helmet on back then either, did you?
No.
You hit a bump, you lose this.
You just let go.
Head, you'd be done. You'd be done.
We didn't go that fast.
Vibe Score is one word, V-I-B-E-S-C-O-R-E. You can download the app, and it's free. By the way, one last one we just put up today. After all this presidential talk today, we did ask you, what's your vibe for Donald Trump? We didn't say high or low. We didn't say anything about him. We just said, Trump, you decide. We'll see what the vibe score is next week. You can go there right now. The Boys from the Beat are right around the corner. It's 249. This is W251. The Boys from the Beat say hi in about 60 seconds. By the way, speaking of sports, we also posted on Vibe Score the viral video. It's actually, I think, a Vine, and it's of Derrick Rose's behind-the-back pass the other night. It wasn't to Jimmy Butler, but somebody else made this. But it was so fun. It was in traffic. You weren't even sure he was going to be able to get through it. Not only did Rose get through, but then he had this really cute behind-the-back kind of pocket pass for a reverse layup. It was just a beautiful video. So we said, hey, that was fun. Give us your vibe on that. We do that sometimes as well, and we'll see what those numbers are next week, too. Hey, have you ever put something off only to kick yourself when you finally get around to doing it? That's the feeling you get when you finally have chocolates from Anderson's Candy Shop. You take your first bite into that smooth, rich, sweet chocolate, expecting an experience like you've had before, and then you realize, this is different. This is chocolate. This is Anderson's. Amazing. As your first bite melts away, you quickly take another. You're in awe. How have you gone so long without Anderson's in your life? Maybe it'll be the chocolate-covered orange peel. Maybe Anderson's famous salted caramels. Those are good. Whatever it is, you'll be ruined for anything else, and you'll love that. If you're still an Anderson's virgin, visit AndersonsCandyShop.com and order today. Or take a weekend trip to Anderson's locations. Downtown Barrington, they're also in Richmond. You're heading up to Lake Geneva or someplace like that, stop right there. With Valentine's Day almost here, you have the perfect excuse. There's even a $10 coupon online right now for first-time shoppers, so don't wait any longer. It's time to find out why everyone says Anderson's. Nothing beats these treats. Mark Carman, Adam Hogue, Kevin Powell. Wow, it's the dream team. Hi, guys. How are you?
Hey, John.
What's going on?
Well, we got to be honest. It's not the most exciting weekend of sports.
Oh, hold on. We're scrapping sports talk, John, and talking Iowa caucuses for the next 4 hours.
You know, nobody else has done that. I'm really anxious to get more of that on the radio. So please do. Please do.
John, I respect the fact that the Super Bowl is a week from tomorrow. I also respect the fact that one of the great tournaments in all of sports, the Australian Open, is going on, and one of the greatest athletes to ever play anything, Serena Williams, had a heartbreaking loss. I don't know what these guys are talking about, but that's where I'm at.
It does feel like a sports hole a little bit,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, it does. I'm bored just hearing Carmen talk already. No, we're going to keep it exciting, though. We got there's some Cam Newton controversy going out there that kind of, you know, why do people hate him? Is race part of it?
John, are you a fan of Cam Newton or not?
I'm not a hater, but I just think that's all about everybody loving Peyton. That's what that's about, don't you think?
I think that's part of it, but I think there's more to it. Like, you've got moms and different cities writing letters to Cam saying that he's exposing them or exposing her kid to things that she doesn't need to see at a football game, which is one of the more ridiculous things that's ever come out of someone's mouth. But that stuff like that has happened.
Okay. Let's talk about the Australian.
Yeah.
Did you guys see the story about the fact that they were gambling? There was wagering going on, illegal betting, and on it wasn't that it was gambling, but that they threw the mixed doubles match.
Yeah. It's a mixed doubles match.
Well, I was amazed that anybody bets on mixed doubles at the Australian, number one. Who knew that was out there? And then after that was exposed and they cut off any more wagering on it, they still threw the match. It looks like they still kind of won according to the way the bet was supposed to go.
Yeah, when the original story came out that somebody that had won a Grand Slam was throwing tennis matches, I, like Roger Federer and Novak Djokovic, I put myself on those guys' level, John. I'm like, who? You tell me who. And then when it comes out that it's a mixed doubles match.
You were so disappointed.
Well, I wasn't. Like, I'm all right, I'm good. Like if there's a little fixing going on in mixed doubles, they're not making any money. I get it. Like, the top players, why would they fix matches? They're making tons of dough. Even if you're in the top 20, you're still a very wealthy person.
Disappointed. Sort of like when you click on a website or an arrow on a web page to get to the really cool thing, and then it's never as good as you thought it was going to be. That's how you felt when you discovered that it was a mixed doubles match. You were looking for something really big, a juicy name, weren't you?
A little bit, I guess. But I was happy that it wasn't.
I just love that Carmen's now talking down tennis when it's convenient.
Mm-hmm. I love tennis.
Well, now it's just a mixed doubles match because it's a controversy.
Well, mixed doubles is something that I play to try to get a date. It's not.
How's that working out for you, by the way?
Not great.
Well, I'm going to listen to at least some of the show, fellas. Have a good one. Thanks for visiting with me. I always enjoy our time together. And so some Cam Newton stuff, maybe some pre-Super Bowl talk here today too, right?
85 Bears as well. They got this documentary coming out. The premiere was down here in Chicago a couple days ago, and we'll have the director of the 85 Bears documentary, Jason Hare, will join us in actually about 40 minutes from now.
Sounds good. Have a good show, fellas. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, John.
It's 257 on WGN.